problem with early elections in the case of Liberia, I'm absolutely certain, and so are quite a few other observers that I've spoken to, that if you were to hand over all the sovereign powers of the state to a newly elected Liberian government, let's say within just a few months of the elections which are taking place in just 6 weeks' time, then there's a very high chance that that government is going to be inefficient and that the state is going to lapse once more into a state of war. And that's what I'm trying to avoid. In order to stop that from happening, the international community has to play a role, and it has to play a structured role, and it can't just come in. Well, it can, but I wouldn't advise it. It shouldn't just come in and, you know, try and run the country. It has to take a very strategic position and try and combine that with encouraging and permitting Liberians to run those of their affairs that they're able to run right now.
You've written in this month's edition of Foreign Affairs Journal that you had some doubts that any candidate now running for the elections in October in Liberia could turn the situation around. I'm a bit surprised because it includes, among those running are a couple of people with very strong connections to the UN, such as Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, a former UN official who was a leading opposition candidate in the last election, and Winston Tubman, a former Minister of Justice, who served as the UN Special Representative for Somalia. Why do you think that even those with close ties to the UN may not be able to turn around the situation in Liberia?
There are some candidates for the presidency in Liberia of clear competence and long experience, including those two individuals whom you just mentioned. And I have nothing whatsoever against those people. In fact, I have a lot of respect for their ability and for their experience. The point is that the system of government itself in Liberia, after more than 15 years of war, has broken down to such an extent that even the most able candidate will not be able to run an administrative machine of the sort that is required to make a country function. And on top of that, you've got large numbers of Liberians who've known nothing, certainly young people, who've known nothing but disturbance and fighting all the time that they've been growing up. And they haven't been able to, a lot of them, you know, go to school, have a reasonable expectation of a decent job. And in those circumstances, I think it would be unwise in the extreme. I think it would be tragic simply for the international community to walk away and say, we've fixed the Liberian problem, let the newly elected president, whoever it may be, let them fix the problem. They won't be able to.
And how would a new trusteeship be run today, and how would it differ from what we were familiar with in the past?
We saw trust territories being formed by the United Nations under the authority of a trusteeship committee. In other words, an official organ of the United Nations. What I'm proposing is something different, which is trustee bodies being set up ad hoc. In fact, we do have some of these in the world already, although they're not called by that name. I mean, in effect, places like Kosovo is really an international trust territory, although it's not called by that name. And I'm suggesting that in some cases we need to formally appoint trustee bodies which would have a different composition in each case depending on their particular circumstances.
Now, you said that in these new trustee bodies there is a role. It would not be run simply by foreigners or by the international community, but there is also an important role to be played by indigenous peoples themselves, by the people from the country that is a trusteeship themselves. You mentioned, for example, using exiles to form an international corps of administrators.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to find a way whereby international actors and the international community, defined in a very vague sense, can take partial responsibility for troubled states, while at the same time allowing nationals of those states some say in their own governance and their own fate. And I'm looking at various combinations which might need that, make that possible. Now, there's various factors. One is, I think it would be quite wrong in this day and age to simply put troubled states, to make them charges of the United Nations, which was something that was done, for example, in the 1940s and 1950s. That's not going to work these days, so I don't want to go down that route. you will need, to some degree, international civil servants who are competent. You want also to try and get people back from, in the case of Africa, many of the talented Africans who've gone to work overseas, notably in North America and in Europe, often the best qualified people. You want to try and attract them homes. There's a lot of talent there. So I'm trying to think of ways in which that could be combined with this idea of new forms of trusteeship.
Could you talk about also your idea for revenues, oil revenues, etc., being given to foreign administrators, as in Chad or Congo?
Well, my main idea is not necessarily that the revenues should be given to foreign administrators. My idea is that if you have a situation where there is no government sufficiently responsible and sufficiently efficient and honest to collect revenues and to account for them and to spend them in the way that sovereign states normally do, in those circumstances, in other words, where you have an international trust body, then that body should be responsible for collecting revenues, and then they would hand over those revenues or in agreed proportions to the body that's actually administering the country. This is already, in fact, going on in the case of Chad, where the oil revenue that the state of Chad earns does not go directly to the national government. It goes into an escrow account that's controlled by an international body, which then pays out of that in agreed proportions. And the object of this, of course, is to make sure that the money actually gets to the central government and actually gets spent on the proper functions of government rather than disappearing into various private pockets on the way.
Now, you said that even indigenous institutions could be co-opted into a trusteeship, including initiation societies of West Africa or Somalia's subclans.
The point about the trust bodies is quite simply that you need some body which has to include key representatives of international institutions and of the international community, which is taking a degree of responsibility at the top level. But that body should not be involved in the minutiae of governance. And what we essentially need to do with some countries, some so-called failed states, for example in Africa, but also I think in some other parts of the world as well, you've got to start, rather than trying to say, let's build a system of government that looks rather like a kind of classical Western system of government, you've got to start looking in a case where a state is broken and saying, what local institutions which have real social roots could potentially play a role in governance? And that's the point I'm trying to make.
You've mentioned that the trusteeship is an idea, or creating trust bodies is an idea for several countries, including others in Africa, Burundi, and Somalia, etc. Do you think that the international atmosphere is right for such a commitment to a trusteeship? After all, you said it could take up to 10 years and lots of money. This is the same time when the U.S. is involved in trying to do state building and democracy building in Iraq. On the other hand, I would think that in Africa there'd be quite a bit of resistance to the trusteeship idea by the AU and other bodies who focus on self-determination and nationalism and democracy building. Given this confluence of things going on in the world today, do you really think that this idea will sell?
Well, I think a lot of people will think about it seriously, and I really think that it has to sell. It's not a message that people really want to hear, or a lot of people. None of the major powers, most particularly the United States, really wants anything like long-term involvement in Africa, even if it's a very light involvement of the sort that I'm suggesting. Any self-respecting African nationalist find it something of a blow to their self-esteem to even think about this. But there has been a great deal more realism in Africa over the last few years, and we see that in the role played by leading African governments and the African Union as an institution in being willing to talk about sharing with international actors the burdens of peacekeeping in Africa. In other words, I think a lot of African statespeople and ministers of governments at the moment are very serious. They seriously recognize the problems that their continent has, and they've realized that they can't fix this on their own. They need a degree of international support, and it has to be more than just ad hoc UN missions or the money that they can raise with a couple of trips around Western capitals. It has to be something more structured and more long-term in orientation. There's lots of reasons why politicians won't want to think about this, because it's always tempting to just think short-term and not think further ahead. But I think there's some serious people who will want to think about this and say, well, we have to think about what Africa's going to look like in 5 or 10 years' time, and we should be thinking about all the possible options.